10th canto, chapter 2. Prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. Kansa, under the protection of his father-in-law, Jarasandha, and with the help of his demoniac friends, like Pralamba, Baka Chanur, Srinivart, Agasura Mushtik, Ambana Vomasura, together they began oppressing the Yadur dynasty. So the Yadur dynasty left home and resided elsewhere. Only some stayed with Kamsa as neutral friends. After Kamsa killed the six sons of Devaki one after another, Balaram entered Devaki's womb. Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini by the Yogamaya potency, who was instigated by Krishna himself. The Lord himself appeared as the eighth son of Devaki, and he ordered Yogamaya to take birth from the womb of Yashoda Devi. Consequently, Krishna and his potency, Yogamaya, appeared simultaneously as brother and sister. The world is full of Vaishnavas and Shaktas, but there is certainly some rivalry between them. Vaishnavas worship the Supreme Lord, whereas Shaktas or Durga worshippers worship Yogamaya according to their desires in the form of Durga, Vajrakali, and Chandika. Following the orders of Krishna, Yogamaya transformed Baladev, Sakrishan, seventh child Devaki, from her womb to the womb of Rohini. Sakrishan appears in order to increase love of Krishna. Sakrishan is known as Baladev. One may take auspicious strength from him to become a devotee of the Lord, so therefore he is known as Balabhadra. After Yogamaya transferred the seventh child of Devaki to Rohini's womb, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared within the heart of Vasudeva and transferred himself into the heart of Devaki. Because the Lord was present in her heart, Devaki, as her pregnancy continued, appeared effulgent. Upon seeing this effulgence, Kansa was full of anxiety. They could not harm Devaki because of their family relationship. Thus he began indirectly thinking of Krishna and became fully Krishna conscious. Meanwhile, because of the Lord's presence within the womb of Devaki, all the demigods came to offer prayers, such as, Krishna is the eternal absolute truth, and the soul is important, more important than the body. Paramatma outflanks the soul. The prayers of the demigods glorify and exalt devotees and explain the fate of persons who superficially consider themselves safe. A devotee fully surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Text 8. The conjunction of material and spiritual in Krishna's pastimes is present to illustrate the methodical nature of bhakti. When devotees perform sadhana bhakti in the form of hearing and chanting about Krishna, they also enjoy the six material sense objects, which is a secondary effect of bhakti. At that time, the devotee cries out pitifully, O Krishna, because of the spirit of enjoyment, I will fall into the dark well of material existence. When a devotee shows fear of material existence and material sense enjoyment, gradually the tendency to enjoy matter subsides. Then bhakti in the form of hearing and chanting Krishna's names and glorifying his transcendental forms, qualities, pastimes, and serving the Lord in various ways becomes prominent. Finally, Lord Krishna himself, the ocean of all wonderful forms and qualities, appears within the devotee. Bhakti is Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness by nature, and it directly manifests the Lord. The Shruti says, Bhaktir Ivenam Darshayati. Devotion makes the Lord reveal himself. As it's said, Rishi appeared from the mind, he can be considered incarnation of the mind. Marici's six children are the six objects of the senses, sound, touch, form, taste, smell, and thought. So these are the six sons of Marici who were killed by Kans. Since Devaki possesses the power to make the Lord appear, she can be considered the incarnation of Bhakti. Kans can be considered the incarnation of fear. Just as fear of the material world removes the six sense objects from the womb of Bhakti, so Kans destroyed the six children of Devaki. Krishna Prem, which is characterized by incense service to the Lord, necessarily appears in the womb of Bhakti after the desires for sense objects are extinguished. Similarly, Ananta, personified form of Seva to the Lord, appeared as the seventh child of Devaki. As Krishna himself appears after Prema Bhakti appears. So Bhagavan himself appeared as the eighth child of Devaki after Shesha disappeared.
Means that Krishna appears for the auspiciousness of Brahma and others. A third meaning is Bhaga means Amsha. I will appear in the mood of the son of Devaki as a plenary portion, Amsha, partially manifesting myself but not completely. Devaki will love me only with Aishwarya Bhav, a loving mood of respect and majesty. Yashoda, however, will manifest pure parental love, Shuddha Vatsalya Prem, for me, devoid of the restriction of Aishwarya. The word Bhavishyasi, but your Yoga Maya will simply appear from Yashoda, this is what it means in the verse, is that it's not directly mentioned, she'll be become the daughter of Yashoda. So it is mentioned that Krishna will become the son, Putratam, of Devaki. This means that Yogamaya's presence in Braj will not be noticed by anyone. Text 10. Krishna's addressing Yogamaya. Yogamaya, your Amsh, which is material maya, mahamaya, will be taken by Vasudev from Mathura to cheat Kamsa. You will be worshipped in various forms in Vindhyachala mountain and other places. All men will worship these forms because you are the supreme Varam, goddess Ishvarim, of those who have all types of material desires. So by sacrificing animals, these ordinary materialistic human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia. Texts 11 and 12, Krishna says, Lord Krishna blessed Maya Devi by saying, in different places on the earth, you will have different names like Durga, Bajrakali, Kanyaka, Vaishnavi, Maya, etc. And there's a word Kurvanti in the verse 11, which means in the future men will call you Mahamaya by various names. by my appearance on earth, some men will become Vaishnavas, and by your appearance, others will become Shaktas, worshippers of Durga, or the external energy. When the seventh child of Devaki was attracted and transferred into Rohini's womb by Yogamaya, later to appear in Gokul as Balaram, the Mathuravasis lamented and cried, "Alas, alas, Devaki has lost her child." Text 15. Vishramsita, lost. Vishnu says, the citizens suspected that Kamsa must have done some black magic to cause the, quote, apparent miscarriage. Vichu Krusha, lament. The Mathuravasis began to lament because of their affection for Mother Devaki. Text 16. Bhagavan Api Vishvatma. Krishna is referred to as Vishwa Atma, the super soul of all living entities, the soul of the universe, because Krishna is actually the object of prema for the whole universe. And again, the phrase is in this verse, Amsha Bhagina. And here, Amsh means that all the avatars, such as the Purusha avatars, are included within Krishna when he appears. And Bhaga, in verse 16, refers to the six opulences or good qualities. Krishna appeared in the mind, Mana Anakadundavi, of Vasudeva, along with all his expansions and opulences. This is explained in Bhagavatam 3.2.15. Pravaresho Mahad Amsha Yukto Yajo Pi Jato Bhagavan Yatagni. Although the Lord, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, is unlimited and unborn, he took birth along with his Amshas. Text 17, there's a word. Bibrat, carried. Purusham Dhamma, spiritual effulgence of the Supreme Person. It means that Vasudeva was holding the power, Dham, of the Lord, Purusham. Or, Vasudeva became effulgent on seeing the appearance of Lord Krishna within himself. Vishakosh Dictionary says that the word Dham, like we say Vrindavan Dham, Mayapur Dham, the word Dham means body, house, ray, place, birth, and influence. And then there's a phrase, Ati Durdarsha, difficult to approach, means that Kansa and other demons could not possibly defeat Vasudeva. Text 18. Explains how Krishna was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. And then, just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. Now the verse words, Vishnath comments, Jagan Mangalam Achutamsham, who is the very form of auspiciousness for the whole universe, who does not deviate, and who includes all expansions such as Narayan and Narasringa, that's Achyuta Sri Krishna. Sarvatmakam Atma Bhutam. The word Sarva refers to all devotees or to Lord Shiva. Atma refers to mind, and Ka means happiness. Thus, Lord Krishna is described as he who gives happiness to the minds of all the devotees or to Lord Shiva. Atma Bhutam means he appears Buddha, on his own, independently, Atma. Krishna appeared in Devaki's mind without the effort that yogis exert to envision the Lord. And the phrase in verse 18, the dhar manastha, means that Devaki held dhara, Krishna, within the mind, mana. This phrase rules out the material conception and birth. An example is given, just like the eastern direction holding the full moon. It is understood that several days later, Devaki could perceive Krishna in her womb, because later in this chapter it says, Dishyamba te kukshigata para puman. O fortunate lady, the Supreme Lord has entered your womb. Text 19. Devaki became the shelter of all material and non-material worlds. But all people could not take advantage of that bliss-giving form. Only a few close persons could appreciate her condition. And a phrase in text 19, Agni Shikeva Rudha, means covered fire. In the prison house of Kamsa, Bhojendra, Devaki was like a covered fire. When a fire is burning in a house, it does not illuminate the town, but only the objects or persons near the house on fire. However, when the fire in the house becomes strong, it can burn down the restricting house. In this way, Devaki would in time destroy Kansa. And there's a phrase in this, verse 19. Saraswati Jnana Kale, knowledge not distributed. Knowledge trapped in the hearts of men who do not distribute it. Actually, the phrase literally means cheaters of knowledge. Does not flourish and benefit others. That knowledge will eventually destroy its restrictor, who is very sinful. In the same way, Devaki would destroy the offensive Kamsa. When Kamsa saw the jubilant nature and smiling of his sister Devaki, he thought, oh, God, Vishnu, is within her womb. He will now kill me. I've never seen my sister Devaki look so brilliant and jubilant. Vishnu's purport in text 20. Devaki, who was holding Vishnu within her womb, Ajit Antaram, filled the room with light. She was smiling, Shuchi Smitam, because of genuine bliss. And Kamsa addressed his sister with the word Harir. Harir means, of course, Hari, Vishnu, but the word Hari can mean lion. Seeing Devaki in this condition, Kamsa thought, like the lion who kills the elephant, Pranahari. There's a phrase in verse 20 is Pranahari. Hari will take my life. And now he's taken shelter in the womb of Devaki. This must be so because I never seen her so effulgent. Text 21. Seeing this, Kamsa was thinking, what should I do now? Devaki's a woman, my sister, and she's pregnant. Maybe I should kill her. But if I do that, my reputation, opulence, duration of life will certainly be vanquished. So now Vishnath comments, this is the thinking of Kamsa when he saw his sister so effulgent. In this verse, Kamsa speaks more clearly his intentions. What should I do about Hari in this situation, Tasmin? Is it proper to kill Hari while he's still an embryo in the womb of my sister? No, because those interested in their own welfare Artha Tantra, do not destroy their own good name. If I kill Hari now, my reputation of prowess and valor will be destroyed. But if Hari is born and grows, and then I fight with him, whether I am victorious or defeated, my glory will remain intact. Killing a child in the womb is not an act of bravery. Therefore, such a deed will not only destroy my fame, but Dharma will also get destroyed. Thus, Kamsa rightly thinks that by killing a woman, a sister, and a fetus, he will vanquish his fame, power, and lifespan. This temporary restriction to Kamsa's evil nature was due to fear. Thus, Kamsa reflected upon his reputation through careful discrimination. The modern people of the world should read this verse in purport, because they're doing so much abortion and killing fetuses left, right, and center. They don't realize they're vanquishing their own fame, power, and lifespan, what to speak of their future suffering, next birth, where they also be aborted. Next verse, he continues to his deliberation. Kamsa thinks, verse 22, if I kill the child to save my life, I will spend the rest of my life in misfortune. Those who perform cruel acts are dead even while existing within the body. If I commit cruel acts like killing this baby in the womb, then I die, people will curse me, and even while living they will curse me. I will fear even while alive. They will shout in taunting voices, Kamsa, you should go to hell for killing this child in the womb. Those who are absorbed in the bodily conception of life, tanu manina, and maintain their bodies by committing violence on others, will surely go to hell. At least we can see that India 5,000 years ago, there was a different idea about abortions and wantonly killing children. It's said that in Delhi, there are 75,000 abortions, children killed every month. So apparently modern day people are not afraid of performing cruel acts, nor are they afraid of, no one even curses them. He's afraid he will get cursed and suffer so much. Even Kamsa, demon. So text 24 describes Kamsa's absorption of his mind in Lord Krishna out of fear, born of hatred. So Kamsa was always thinking badly, continually thinking of Hari. And wherever he looked, he saw Hari. And such a vision gives bliss and prem, if he had prem for the Lord. Because he was full of fear, it created extreme distress in his mind. This is the difference between a devotee seeing the Lord and enemy. Kamsa, when he was sitting on his throne or sitting in his room or on his bed, even while eating or sleeping or walking, he could only see Krishna. By thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Very beautiful purport in text 25. Brahma, Shiva, Narad, Devala Vyas, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, many demigods, they approached the maternity room of Devaki invisibly, and they start offering obeisances and prayers to please Krishna in her womb. And then there's the word, who can bless everyone. Brishanam means the Lord who blesses all. So this word, of course, it also refers to Barsha, which means rain. So Vishnu says this word, Brishanam, text 25, refers to Lord Sri Krishna, who is like a cloud. Like a rain-bearing cloud, Krishna rains down the nectar of his pastimes. Brahma acts as the chief cultivator in the field of the 14 worlds. And then there's the phrase in the verse, Brahma Bhavash. Bhavash refers to Brahma. Excuse me. It says Brahma Bhavash means Bhavash refers to Lord Shiva. So Brahma is like a cultivator in this field of the 14 worlds. And Shiva is like the chief peacock with his tail feathers spread, fondly dancing while the rains are falling. The verse has a phrase, Munibir Narad Adibi. So that means Narad, beginning with Narad and others, Munis. They represent singers. In this analogy, they're like chatuka birds, expressing great longing to drink the rains of Krishna's pastimes. And the phrase deve, demigods. The demigods are like suffering elephants surrounded by the forest fire of Kamsa, Jarasandha, and other demons. All these demigods came to the prison house of Kamsa to glorify Lord Hari in the womb of Devaki. In text 26, sample of the prayers that the demigods recited to Krishna in the womb of Devaki, Vasudeva Krishna and Mathura. They said, Satya Vratam Satya Param Tri Satyam Satyasya Yonim Nihitam Chasatye Satyasya Satyam Vita Satya Netram Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapana Satyatmakam Tvam Sharanam Prapana. So you've heard that so many words Satyam, which means truth, and Vishwanath describes the various meanings of truth in the very beautiful purport in text 26 of chapter 2 of the 10th canto, Prayers by the Demigods. Vishnu Chakravartipad said, You, Sri Krishna, are the only truth in this world, said the demigods. You are understood by devotees, but not by others. This is the meaning of the demigods' praise in this verse. Krishna is the only truth in this world, and only devotees can understand him. O Krishna, the demigods go on, you have made a vow to protect your devotees, and that vow is upheld at all times. Therefore, everyone should take shelter of you. This is also the intention of the verse. We take shelter of you, whose vows are true. Satkriteva prapano yas, tavasmiti chayachite, avayam savadatasme, dadam yatad vratam nama. This is a verse from Ramayana, Yudhakanda, 1833. If one surrenders unto me sincerely, saying, My Lord, from today I will fully surrender unto you, I will always give him protection. That is my vow. Unlike the temporary results obtained from the demigods, surrender to you is satya param. Satya means extending in all place and time, and param means the best. We take shelter of you, are the best in all time and space. Satyam can also refer to Krishna's name. You are supreme and called Satya. Satye pratishta, Krishna satyamatra pratishtam, satyat satyohi govindas, tasmat satyohina amata. Krishna is established in truth, and truth is established in Krishna, Udyama Parva. Govinda is more truthful than truth itself, therefore Govinda is called Satya. Krishna's intelligence, strength, and all his transcendental qualities are also truth. The three Shaktis of Krishna, Gyan, Bala, Kriya, take shelter of you. Therefore, you are called Sri Satyam. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6:8 says, Natasyakaryam karanam chavidyate natat samaschaba yadikascha drishyate parasya shaktir vadeva shuyate sabhaviki jnana balakriyacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to do anything personally, for he has such potencies that anything he wants done will be done perfectly well through the control of material nature. Sabhavaki jnana balakriya cha. And the phrase in verse 26, Sat yasya yoni, the amshas of Krishna are also satya, the demigod said. We take shelter of you, the source of all avatars, such as Matsya, Kurma, and other eternally true forms. Nihitam, it's in the verse, entered. We, demigods, take shelter of you who are present in Satya, which means Mathura, Vaikuntha, and other spiritual abodes. You, my dear Lord Krishna, are the essence of the essence, the cream of all spiritual objects, Satyasya Satyam, or the material world is one satya, real thing, but existing only temporarily. You are the cause of the material world, but you exist in all time eternally. Therefore, you are the satya of all satyas, the truth of all truths. This is similar to the phrase in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4:4:18. Pranasya pranam, uta chakshushas chakshur, uta shrotrasya shrotram, anayasanam, manaso ye mano vidu. The Supreme Truth is understood to be the life air, sustaining everyone's life air, the vision of everyone's eyes, the hearing power of the ear, and the sustenance of food itself. In his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Madhvacharya confirms this by quoting the following statement from the Vedic Shrutis. Satyam yavedam vishram astrijatta. This universe created by the Lord is real. Then there's a phrase in verse 26, Satyanetra. O form of eternal truth, we surrender unto you who are endowed with all senses headed by the eyes, Netra. We surrender to you who are the real form of truth, Satyamakam. Then text 27, a very long verse about the tree of the body and all of its holes and coverings and etc. elements. Vishnath comments on text 27. The Lord then asks a question to the demigods who are praying. Of course, the Lord's in the womb, but at any rate. If I, who am endowed with body, senses, and dham, am satya, then is the material world asatya, false? The demigods answer by this verse. The world is true, but subject to destruction in time, whereas you are not destroyed by time. you're indestructible. With this intention, the demigods recite verse 27. It begins with the word ekayana. Ekayana means that prakriti, the material nature, is the one shelter of the tree of the material world. There are two fruits of the tree of the material world, happiness and misery. The phrase is there. Dvi phalas, tri mulas, chatu rasa. All these phrases are there. There are three roots of the tree, sattva, rajan, tama, goodness, passion, ignorance. There are four rasas, namely the four varnas and ashramas. There are five types of knowledge. As a verse has a phrase, pancha vida, which means that. And Vishnath explains. Five types of knowledge gathered from the five senses. There are six natural qualities, sadatma, of the tree known as the six whirlpools. Lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. There are seven coverings of the tree of the body, skin, flesh, blood, fat, bone, marrow, and semen. There are eight branches, vitapa. The five, which means the five gross elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And there are nine holes in the tree of the body, two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, mouth, rectum, and genital. There are 10 leaves, which represents the 10 life airs. And there are two birds in the tree, the jiva and the lord. And then there's verse 30 and 31, which talk about how the lord protects his devotees. And the demigods are offering, of course, these prayers to Krishna in the womb of Devaki. They've come in our maternity room invisibly to others and offer these prayers. Texts 30 and 31, which describe how the Lord protects his devotees. So in text 26, he says that they glorify Krishna as his lotus feet are like a boat to cross the ocean of birth and death. And if someone follows the Mahajans, devotees in the chariots, he can cross the ocean like crossing a stepping over the hoofprint of a calf. So he says that for such great devotees, crossing the ocean of material existence, samsara, birth and death, becomes as easy as stepping over the hoofprint of a calf. They are not even aware of its existence. And the next verse describes that, O Krishna, you're like the shining sun, always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And you are Vanchakalpa Taru. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross, because you are very merciful to other devotees. So the word is there, swayam, personally, in text 31. It indicates that the material ocean of birth and death is difficult to cross for others, but no trouble at all for the devotees. There's a word in the verse, dyuman, which means light or sun. And Krishna is addressed with the word as dyuman, sun, because it infers that those within whom the sun of Krishna does not remain in the material ocean. In other words, if the sun of Krishna is within our heart, we don't stay in the ocean of darkness. And he says, it means, O Krishna, when you shine on the sunrise mountain of Prema Bhakti, all darkness automatically disappears. Then, easily, one can cross the ocean of material existence. Navam atra te nidaya means leaving the boat on the bank, which is mentioned in the verse, means that devotees establish bhakti movements in this world and then cross the ocean of material existence. By this act, others are able to cross over the ocean of repeated birth and death. Though the material influence gets completely destroyed, the devotees remain here. This is only an expression of humility in the devotees. For devotees, the material world is compared to the water in a calf's hoofprint, because the water in the calf's hoofprint is actually purifying and praiseworthy. In the same way, the devotee's impression that he is caught in the samsara purifies the devotee of the disease of false identification, and therefore is praiseworthy. And he goes on in text 32, talking about this, how devotees cross this ocean of material existence. Vishnu says, "For Vaishnavas, the ocean of material existence is no bigger than the water in a calf's hoofprint. But for jnanis, who do not accept the spiritual form of the Lord, the impersonalist, material ocean is very difficult to cross." There's a verse from Bhagavatam 4:22-40, which Vishnath quotes Sanat Kumara, who described how difficult it is to cross the ocean, because it's invested, this material ocean of nations is full of dangerous sharks. Although non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances, we recommend that one should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Krishna says the same point in 12.5 Gita. Klesho dikatarastesham avyakta saktachetasam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehavadbir avapyate. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in the impersonal path is always difficult for those who are embodied. So demigods are saying in this verse 32, O lotus-eyed Lord, those who do not accept you have no realization of your sweetness and merciful glance. They may think themselves liberated, because this is that famous verse. Yen ye ravindaksha vimukta maninas twayasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya avruya kritchena paramparam tata patantyado nadrita yushmarangraya. Prabhupada quotes this so much, and this is verse 32 of 10.2 Bhagavatam, which we're reading Vishnu's commentary on. So in this verse, it says that those who are not devotees accept different processes, but Brahma says that they try to achieve the highest perfection, vimukta maninas. They, maninas, think themselves especially liberated, but their intelligence is avishuddha buddhaya, impure. So Vishnu comments. The word astabhavad, verse 32, means speculation without knowing Krishna's lotus feet. Because of a lack of asta, of affection, bhav, for the Lord, they think Krishna to be illusory. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanamashritam. Gita 9.11 says, only fools regard me as an ordinary person. And the phrase avishuddha buddhya, impure intelligence. Because of such foolishness, they are called avishuddha buddhya. The jnanis are not vishud, really pure, though they have purified their hearts by controlling lust and other material urges. Krishna. However, by cultivation of the knowledge generated from such painful practices, such as austerity and sense control, Krishna, the jnanis can attain liberation, paramparam. It should be understood, however, that even the jnanis must possess some mixed bhakti, for without that they cannot attain even liberation in this life. Lord Brahma prays elsewhere in 10.14.4, Shreya Shritim Bhaktim Udasyate Vibho Klishantiye Kevala Bodha Labdaye. My dear Lord Krishna, bhakti unto you is the best path of self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in jnana, cultivating speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. In the verse 32, the phrase is Patanti Adha, fall down. Without bhakti, the goal of jnana becomes like a mirage, and eventually the jnani falls down into material existence again. Anadrita Angraya. Because Anadrita Angraya, he's neglected your lotus feet. If jnanis have some type of bhakti, how do they fall down? They fall because they think that your lotus feet are material, and therefore they do not respect them. There are two types of bhakti practice as a limb of jnana. The jnanis practice bhakti a little bit, because the scriptures say that jnana cannot be perfected without the touch of bhakti. For example, some jnanis worship the deity, but they take the deity of Krishna as an illusory form and thus worship with disrespect. Others simply worship because of material attachment without disrespect. The first type adopt extreme austerities, and after a long time, when Bhakti Devi bestows knowledge to destroy their ignorance and establishes them on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, liberated state, they stop their practices of bhakti and deity worship, such as deity worship. These jnanis are falsely liberated and are referred to in verse 32 with the phrase Vimukti Manina. They cannot be called Jivan Mukta, truly liberated souls. According to Krishna's statement in Bhagavatam 11.14.21, Bhaktyaham Ekaya Graya. Eka, only by executing bhakti can one appreciate me. Because of the absence of bhakti and the presence of offenses, the jnanis do not attain the direct association of the Lord. Therefore, the burned up seeds of their karma again begin to sprout, and such jnanis fall into the material world again, which means patanti ado. An example of this is given in the Vishnu Bhakti Chandradaya concerning Rathiyatra. It says, quote, even though a person may have burned up all his karmas with the fire of knowledge, if, out of illusion, he does not follow the Lord during Rathiyatra, he will become a Brahma Rakshash. The Vasana Basya says, even a Jivan Mukta, liberated soul, if he offends the Lord, who is full of inconceivable energies, he will fall into the bondage of karma again. The bhakti of the second type of jnani brings one to the Brahma-Bhuta platform also, and it extinguishes both knowledge and ignorance, but bhakti does not become extinguished. That type of jnani attains the status of Jivan Mukta and achieves a direct meeting with the Lord. Such a person is described in Bhagavad Gita 18.54. Brahma Bhuta Prasnatmana Sochati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes joyful. And in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktimam avijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvata. Only persons engaged in devotional service can factually know the transcendental position of the Lord. That's a very Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur ki jai. That's his verse on 10.2.32. Now this is text 33. Oh Madhav, demigod said, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of Lakshmi, if devotees completely in love with you, sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotion. So Vishwanath explains the verse in this way, quoting the demigods as saying, Bharat Maharaj, Indradumna, and Chitraketu, who were great devotees of yours, are not criticized, even though they fell down. Then why do jnanis get criticized so heavily? The verse answers the question. Devotees on the Bhakti Marg do not fall like pretenders to liberation, but to speak of giving up Krishna's feet. Even if bhaktas fall, in that state they remain firmly attached to your lotus feet. Though Chitraketu, Bharat, and Indradumna fell and took the bodies of demons like Vritta and others, their prem increased 100-fold. One should see their fall down as a cause for increasing prema. Their fall is not like the fall of aspirants for liberation, for even in a fallen state, devotees remain firmly attached to your feet. They remain faithful to the Lord. They think that their fall down has been arranged by the Lord for their own benefit. For the Lord promises that his devotee will never perish. Being thus convinced of Krishna's protection, they tread over the heads of the demigods, causing obstacles. In other words, they conquer over all obstacles. Another meaning can be that the devotees hold on their own heads the feet of the Lord, which destroys all obstacles. Because the verse says, 33, that devotees traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in bhakti. Now in verse 34, Vishnath explains a summary of the previous verses in 10.2. In verse 29, there was mention of Lord Sri Krishna's pure forms appearing in the world of moving and non-moving entities. The verse says that the purpose of Krishna's appearance in this world is to help the devotees. In verse 30 through 33, the purity of bhakti has been mentioned. In verse 32, there is the hint that by attachment to Krishna's feet, the devotee also attains liberation as a secondary result. This shows that the real purpose of Krishna's appearance in the world is to establish bhakti. As a sample of some of the most interesting purports, and there's one verse 36. Nanama rupe gunajanma karma bir nirupitadvye tavatasya sakshina manovacho vyam anumeya vartmano deva kriya yam pratiyantyatapihi. The demigods continue to pray to Krishna in the womb of Devaki and Mathura. O Lord Krishna, your transcendental name and form are not ascertained by those who speculate on the path of imagination. Your name, form, and attributes can be ascertained only through devotional service. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakura says, not only your form is Shuddha Sattva, but also your name. Your transcendental name and form can be realized only by devotion. There is no other way. The phrase says, Nanama Rupe Guna Janma Karma Bira. Guna refers to attributes, refers to Krishna's beautiful form and merciful glance. Nanama Rupe Guna Karma Guna Janma Karma Bira. Karma refers to pastimes like lifting overland hill and artistically standing in a threefold bending pose. Janma, appearance, refers to Krishna's role as the son of Nanda and Vasudeva. Vishnu says that the demigods mean to say, O Krishna, even by chanting your name or meditating on your form, the casual observer, Sakshina, which is in this verse, cannot discern or realize your sweetness, nor perceive your qualities, birth, and activities. If one fails to realize the sweetness of your name or form, he has not attained any realization at all. Like those with jaundice, chewing sugar cane, they can't taste its sweetness. Similarly, those devoid of devotion cannot realize the sweetness of your name and form. Therefore, your name and form must also be Shuddha-sattva, purely spiritual. After praising Lord Krishna in the womb, whose form is transcendental, the demigods, thinking that Brahma and Shiva would see something, some wonderful pastimes that they would miss, they kept Brahma and Shiva in front of them, and then they departed for the heavenly abodes. Thus ends the sampling of Vishnu Chakravarti's major purports to Chapter 2, Prayers for the Demigods.